Okay, briefly on boxing. Sergey Kovalev was a pretty good fighter at some point. He's older now. He's lost a few fights, and he fought a couple of days ago, which just reminded me of my absolute obsession with the narrative or storytelling aspect of boxing. Does the old guy have one big victory left, or is it time to hang it up? We all love those second acts in life. I mean, that's what makes life interesting and unpredictable. Giving it one more shot, whether it's a musician, boxer, writer, baker, accountant, whatever, there's beauty in that going for it one more time, you know? And you never know. Sometimes that old boxer or actor or whatever knocks you out with a great performance. It's like, yep, that motherfucker still has it. Alas, for Kovalev, he didn't have much left in the tank. He was losing pretty badly, and before the final round, the camera cut to Kovalev, and Kovalev made the sign of the cross with his boxing glove, then kissed his boxing glove, and then looked up and motioned it up to the sky, which a lot of boxers do, and I just love that. It's like, God or whoever or whatever, give me the strength and let's do this, okay? Kovalev then got up for the final round and eventually got knocked down pretty badly. He got back up and finished the fight, but he ended up losing. And at the end there, Kovalev had such a defeated and wiped out look, but there was still something beautiful about it. But hopefully he's done with boxing, and I wish him the best. I always liked watching him box. And in the main event, Alexander Usyk beat Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury was actually named after Mike Tyson. I thought Usyk would win. I mean, he's a special fighter. He has some, like, other level. So congrats to Mr. Usyk. Okay, let's veer off here. Some of the greatest movies involve crimes, whether failed or successful, serious or comedic. And as I have said ad infinitum, I love detective movies about missing women, sex, corruption, cynicism. I mean, shit, those are all of the greats. So let's talk about crime, both fictional and real. And of course, music, movies, and madness.
You are my density. You are my density.
And speaking of criminals, I was thinking the other day about that sleazeball Harvey Weinstein and how people like him, when they're on trial, all of a sudden they really like play up any health issues. And I get it, to elicit some sympathy, but it can be ridiculous at times. I remember Weinstein started using a walker and shit to go to court. And then the Golden State Killer was like in a wheelchair in court acting old and feeble as shit. And then they had camera footage from his cell of him exercising and shit. And of course, Bill Cosby, I think all of a sudden he like showed up blind in court. And I was like, okay, bold move, sir. Well, I shouldn't call you sir because you're a scumbag. But anyway, so let's get back to crime. Let's get back to my life of crime, or my so-called life of crime starring Claire Danes and Jared Leto. Dick Francis has a cool quote. Crime to many is not crime, but simply a way of life. If laws are inconvenient, ignore them. They don't apply to you. In which I dig the quote, but at some point the law will catch up to you if you keep breaking laws. So I grew up in the harsh, post-apocalyptic, murderous town of Pleasant Hill in Northern California. I'm just kidding, of course. I mean, I grew up in Pleasant Hill, but it was a perfectly fine town. It was pleasant, for lack of a better word. No reason for a young dipshit to start engaging in any criminal activity, but hey, people are stupid, or maybe it was just me. So as a child, I'm sure I engaged in some, you know, conscious kind of mild crime, stealing a candy or something, but very minor stuff. I got into action figures back in the day, maybe when I was like 13 or 14 or 12 or some shit, and I stole plenty of those. I would take them out of the pack in the toy store and stick them in my pants. You know, there isn't much room in my pants, but I made it work. And the stupid thing is, my parents probably would have bought the dumb thing for me anyway. But I guess there's just that human element of doing bad or whatever. And within reason, being bad can sometimes feel good. And let's quickly dash out a goddamn great little Canadian movie with Elliot Gould as a timid bank teller and Christopher Plummer as the villain. It's directed by Daryl Duke, not to be confused with Bill Duke, the actor-director who memorably was in 1987's Predator. I saw Bill Duke at a club once. I went to go see some girl sing, and he had a definite presence about him. And also at that club that night, my friends were friends with MC Light, who I kind of grew up listening to her rap, and she had the best voice. She had a great personality, but she just had that distinctive MC Light voice, even when she talked. Oh my God, she was totally cool. Please check out one of her songs just to hear her sing. But anyway, The Silent Partner is clever as hell. It's got some cool twists. It comes together in the end, and it's completely under the radar. Elliot Gould starts skimming off cash for himself, and he gets himself involved with this criminal. It's also got the cute as hell Susanna York. So yeah, check that out. And Woody Allen is definitely a sleazy character, but his Crimes and Misdemeanors from 1989 is pretty good. It's a kind of an existential shit about philandering, morals, and whatnot. Kind of ironic coming from Woody Allen, but anyway. It stars Martin Landau, Woody Allen, Angelica Houston, and Alan Alda. I remember when I was an editor, I went to a dinner at this place called The Red Door in West Hollywood. And yes, they did have a red door. But anyway, we were all drinking and eating and talking, and some girl said I sounded like Alan Alda when I talked, which is kind of rushed, which is how I speak, I think, when I get excited, not hyperverbal per se, but hyperverbal-ish. And I just remember for the rest of the dinner, I sounded to myself just like Alan Alda. I don't know if I started like acting more like I was Alan Alda in my speech, but it was a kind of a fun moment and I'll never forget it. Alan Alda always gives off like an intelligent vibe. He was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2015, but I hope he's doing okay. All right, back to my childhood misdeeds. All right, this next one isn't necessarily criminal, but it is criminally stupid. Like maybe 2 weeks after I got my driver's license at age 16, I went around driving in my little Honda with my little buddy Joe. We were just randomly driving around neighborhoods, bullshitting, looking at stuff and whatever. And so we were driving down this, you know, pretty narrow little street with cars parked on both sides of the streets, you know, houses and shit. And there was a couple of girls standing down at the end of the block. So me being a complete dumbass, I kind of like peeked down below my steering wheel so the girls like wouldn't see me. Not sure why. I guess I was scared of the girls. But anyway, I ran into a parked car on the right-hand side of the street, then kind of steered over and hit a car on the left-hand side of the street. And then that car bumped into, I am kidding you not, a trailer, which was knocked off its hitch and literally started rolling down the street. Somehow, amazingly, some dude ran out of the house in front. And he was like, what the hell? And he went and put the brakes on the trailer. I mean, the fucking thing could have like ran into a house or a person or something. Oh, my God. I was mortified. And I felt like the biggest idiot ever. My parents, saints that they were, weren't too rough on me. Speaking of being a dumbass, I will never forget me and my buddy Hornbeck were in Los Angeles at the Getty Museum, and there was a painting, I'm guessing it was of Alexandre Dumas, the French novelist who wrote The Three Musketeers, but the painting had written on it, A, period, D-U-M-A-S. So anyway, in my best butthead impersonation, I pointed at the painting, and I said to Hornbeck, hey, look, Beavis, A, dumbass. Yeah, dumbass, dumbass. And everyone knows that Alexandre Dumas and me were both born on July 24th, right? Everyone knows that. Two dumbasses, together, bound by fate. He was born in 1802, though, so a few years before me. And speaking of driving cars, but in a cooler way, I recently saw the Ryan Gosling movie The Fall Guy, loosely based on the Lee Majors TV show directed by David Leitch, who, like Hal Needham, was a stuntman at the beginning. It's also got Emily Blunt and the pretty funny Aaron Taylor Johnson as a complete dim-witted actor. It's a fun movie. Silly, a bit too long, but it is satisfying. And Ryan Gosling has some charisma and great self-depreciation. And quickly on Gosling, speaking of Beavis and Butthead, the Beavis and Butthead skit on Saturday Night Live with him as Beavis and Mikey Day as Butthead is legitimately funny. They're in like this talk show audience. They don't know each other, but they look exactly like Beavis and Butthead, but they're not them. They're just like two normal dudes. But it throws the guest off who keeps seeing the Beavis and Butthead in the audience. I continue to crack up near the end when they finally sit the two guys together and they're asking Ryan Gosling as Beavis if, you know, if it's new to him that he looks like Beavis. And he's like, well, I've heard rumblings that I look like this Beamus. I've heard rumblings. That is like completely quality writing. Well done. Check out that skit if you haven't, but you probably already have. I mean, I know my 10 listeners are quite discerning. 9 listeners, not including my mom. And an interesting as hell movie from 1980, Richard Rush is the stuntman with the formidable Peter O'Toole, Steve Railsback, and a cute Barbara Hershey. Steve Railsback is a criminal on the run from the police. He wanders onto the set of a movie. One of the stuntmen dies, and the director, Peter O'Toole, wants to use Steve Railsback as his replacement. It's interesting, a bit cerebral. Sometimes you don't know if you're watching the movie that they're shooting or the actual movie itself, and it's just kind of one of a kind. It's got a great song in it, sung by Dusty Springfield, called Bits and Pieces. You can't find it on Spotify. You got to look on goddamn YouTube. But what a great song. Holy shit. Please check that out. Here's a little bit of that.
out of nowhere into sight, out of darkness into light. You come running, pushing time, out of reason, out of rhyme. Bits and pieces of your past clings like shadows to your heels, and your heart is learning fast how it feels. As you watch and wonder where you belong, and the crowd it moves and takes you along, and the colors splash and repaint the sky, and reality is yours to deny. When you look for someone your arms can hold, who will let you tell what begs to be told, then ask yourself, what good are your dreams in a world where nothing is what it seems?
And that line, nothing is what it seems, fits perfectly with the movie The Stuntman. Okay, what's next? This isn't really Criminal Activity, but I always thought it was kind of funny in a Jeff Spicoli way, who was to Sean Penn's stoner character in the kind of downer film 1982 Fast Times at Ridgemont High, directed by Amy Heckerling and based on a book by Cameron Crowe. Anyway, I was in high school and it was Spanish class. We had a test that day and we had a substitute teacher there. And someone from the previous class that I was friends with got me a copy of the test, and I wrote all the answers on it. So we were having the test, and right as we began, I stupidly pulled out the test from my back pocket, and it made like so much noise. It was like when everyone was quiet, everybody heard. The teacher was like, "What is that? Give me that." And I just kind of got up, opened the classroom door, crumpled it up, and I threw it down the hallway, which was kind of ballsy and kind of genius, kind of. I mean, the teacher couldn't go look for it, so the teacher had the teacher's assistant go look outside in the hallway. And I was friends with the TA, and as she was walking out, she, like, winked at me. And then when she came back, she was like, "I couldn't find anything." So I emerged unscathed once again. But don't worry, dear listener, I was soon to be scathed. You really only hear the word unscathed, which means unharmed. Thus, scathed means to be harmed or injured. Anyway, moving on still, in high school, my friend somehow bought a gun from like a flea market. It was like a 357 Magnum. And I was just like, "Oh, hey, can I borrow your gun for a bit?" Just to kind of look at it and hold it. And yes, I was an idiot. And so I would like, you know, load it and kind of just look at it and then unload it and just kind of spin the fucking chamber or whatever. And anyway, it was loaded one night and I was, you know, on a quiet evening in Pleasant Hill, I was in my top floor bedroom in my parents' townhouse on Kimberly Circle. I was sitting on my bed. I cocked back the hammer. Yeah, don't ask why. You know, went to release the trigger, but my thumb slipped, and so the fucking gun went off and went through the upper side of my little TV VCR combo, which miraculously survived the shooting, and then it went into the wall. I mean, I was shitting bricks. My ears were ringing. There was smoke in the room. And my poor parents in on the second floor bedroom, they were watching fucking Columbo or something. And they heard a gunshot in Pleasant Hill. Come on, man. And I just ran down the stairs, kind of in shock. And I remember just yelling, "A gun, a gun." This was the same bedroom and the same TV that I used to videotape myself mimicking scenes from movies. And this is the same bedroom where my girlfriend had a seizure while I was on acid. So, yeah, an eventful room. My parents, again, didn't punish me too bad, and they talked with my friend's mom and my friend, and I kind of slowly parted ways. But Jesus, I mean, I could have shot off my foot or someone next door. Now, you think I would have got my fill of guns after that episode, but you would be wrong. Anyway, let's quickly touch on a film noir trilogy that are just three great goddamn movies, all directed by the expert and skilled John Dahl. Now, John Dahl is from Montana, and get this, one of his film professors was Bill Pullman. And I guess his students persuaded Bill Pullman to pursue film roles. I saw Bill Pullman in L.A. once at the same Pete's where I saw Mike Tyson. This now closed Pete's was the former home of the Italian restaurant Mezzaluna, where Nicole Simpson met Ronald Goldman. He worked at the restaurant and he lived nearby in Brentwood on Gorham Avenue. But yeah, Jesus, starting with 1989's Kill Me Again with Val Kilmer and his wife at the time, Joanne Whaley Kilmer. It's just a crackerjack noir detective thing where Val Kilmer helps her fake her death and it leads to deceit, treachery, passion, heartbreak. It's also got a great Michael Madsen as the villain. It's like prime Michael Madsen. And also my man John Grise is also in it. Okay, on to the next John Dahl classic. It's 1993's Red Rock West, a neo-noir with Nicolas Cage, Twin Peaks' Lara Flynn Boyle, Dennis Hopper, and the great departed character actor J.T. Walsh. Nicolas Cage is a drifter who gets set up. It leads to, again, double-crossing and death, and it's just great. And of course, you knew John Dahl would work in Bill Pullman as an actor, and he did in the great The Last Seduction with the foxy as hell Linda Fiorentino and the kind of dud Peter Berg, who kind of later became a director. Linda Fiorentino is a classic femme fatale. Peter Berg is a small town guy who falls for her and is way in over his head. It's ice cold, and Fiorentino is just a classic in it. Please watch it. While we're mentioning Linda Fiorentino, I just completely love William Friedkin's 1995 erotic thriller Jade, written by the soon-to-implode Joe Esterhaz with Chaz Palminteri, Linda Fiorentino, and the man himself, Michael Biehn, and the lovable turkey David Caruso. Linda Fiorentino is the prime suspect in a bunch of sex murders. She used to be David Caruso's lover, and now she's with Chaz Palminteri. It's set in San Francisco, looks great, got some great set pieces. It's fairly big budget and just fucking ridiculous in the best way. It was pretty much a bomb. It's corny, stupid, and kind of amazing, though, with a car chase scene to rival Friedkin's earlier film, The French Connection, from 1971. I always remember a corny line from Jade. They're looking through pictures of, like, you know, some of the videotaped sex between the women and these guys. They don't know who this woman is. And one of them says something like, "Well, we know one thing. She's not a nun." And David Caruso was famously in TV's NYPD Blue and was a complete asshole on the set and thought he was too good for television. He wanted to be a movie star, so he left the show. David Caruso's first attempt at movie stardom was Barbe Schroeder's Kiss of Death from 1995 with Nicolas Cage and Samuel L. Jackson. It's a loose remake of the 1947 Richard Widmark movie. It was kind of a misfire. It gets super silly at the end. And then after Kiss of Death was the flop that was Jade. And that was pretty much the end of Caruso as a movie star. Although, please watch Brad Anderson's 2001 Session 9. This has to be the third time I've mentioned it to you, so come on and watch it so I can shut the fuck up about it. Just let me know when you watch it, okay? Give me a call. Okay, back to my twisted teenage years. I mentioned getting fired from Payless Drugstore, mainly because I stole a bunch of dumb shit, shampoo, chewing tobacco, some TVs, but I also stole a pellet gun. And like I said, you think I would have learned my lesson with guns after shooting a .357 Magnum in my room, but no, I was a dipshit, remember? Actually, I was the king of the dipshits. So let's get into it. Me and a couple friends from high school used to pass the time, as idiots do, by shooting at car windows with the pellet gun. Only parked cars, of course. No one was around or anything like that. We weren't shooting at people. Still completely stupid, but anyway. I got pretty good at it. I was actually kind of the Martin Riggs of Pleasant Hill. We would mainly drive around the area and just shoot random cars. It was thrilling, kind of, but yes, completely stupid, pointless, and mean. But our teenage brains just hadn't yet formed yet, you know? Or at least that's my excuse. We were doing finals in high school, and we didn't have to go to school until, like, I don't know, 10:30 or 11 or something. So we went to this kind of crap diner in Pleasant Hill called Caro's. I don't even know if they're still around. Their motto was Caro's Cares. It was actually near a Denny's as well, and I will never forget their breakfast menu. There was a dish on it called Moons Over My Hemi, which also kind of sounds like a porn. But anyway, we left Caro's and we were driving out, and there was like a pretty nice looking red Corvette or something parked in the back. And I was like, oh man, we got to shoot that. And so from a distance, I shot the back window. It just shattered. And I was like, oh yes. And then we looked over and there was some like woman standing there completely staring right at us. And I was like, oh no. And we dropped off the gun smartly at my friend's house and drove to school. But there was like an impending sense of doom present. And so we were driving to school. There were some cop cars in front of the junior high, which was next to the high school. And I pretty much knew our goose was cooked. So there were more cop cars in the high school parking lot. And we stupidly pulled into the lot. And right away, the cops, you know, got all over us, came over, talked about it, you know, asked us if we were shooting windows, blah, blah, blah. We denied everything. And they searched the car. Was that even legal? I don't know. Maybe I should sue the bastards. I'm just kidding. But they found like a pellet. And so they cuffed us, took us into the station, and it took about 30 seconds to rat on each other. We were pathetic. I think I had to do some community service, and my parents paid the fine. Goddamn, listening to all this reminds me of how great my parents were to me, even when I was a complete dumbass. So yeah, I was like 17, maybe at the time, and that more or less ended my criminal life. I mean, I guess it's maybe good I got it out of my system when I was young. Who knows what would have happened otherwise if I, you know, never did anything. Maybe I could have just lived a normal life without any crime, but I'm just saying. But yeah, there is just like this occasional innate force to do the wrong thing. You know, I think it's human nature to think about stuff like that. But after my high school days, I kept all of my criminal passions confined to the silver screen, more or less. Okay, speaking of the silver screen, let's get back to some movies. Okay, there's a completely cool crime robbery noir movie called The Lookout from 2007, directed by Scott Frank in his directorial debut with Joseph Gordon-Levitt as a once-star high school athlete who had a car wreck. Somebody died in it. Now he's a janitor working night shift at a bank. He has some, like, memory issues. Jeff Daniels is great as his blind roommate. Matthew Good is the asthmatic villain, and Isla Fisher is the cute girl who lures Joseph Gordon-Levitt into collaborating with these guys to rob a bank. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, weirdly enough, is named Chris Pratt, like the actor Chris Pratt. I once kind of liked Chris Pratt, but he kind of behaved like an asshole as far as I could tell with Anna Faris, who I love, and I always had a crush on her, so fuck Chris Pratt. Anyway, back to The Lookout. It's great. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is fantastic in it, and it completely comes together in such a satisfying way. Joseph isn't quite as dumb as he seems. He keeps a notebook where he kind of writes down stuff all the time, and Jeff Daniels memorably tells him at one point, "Start at the end." There was that word memorably again. Holy shit. It's hard to say. And what a great movie. It only made like $5.5 million at the box office, but hey, popularity doesn't usually correlate with quality. Or that's what I keep telling myself as I look at the pathetic number of people that listen to this podcast. And it's funny, there's a doctor at my work. He's a really cool guy, but I recommended this movie, The Lookout, to him like 2 years ago. And he still hasn't watched it. Every time I see him, I think of the fucking movie. But anyway, do try and watch it sometime. And speaking of criminals, the scummy, sleazy financier Ivan Boesky died recently at 87. He was the asshole who was obsessed with making money, and he inspired the "greed is good" speech by the fictional Gordon Gekko, played by Michael Douglas in the 1987 Oliver Stone movie Wall Street. It was inspired by Boesky's commencement speech at UC Berkeley, where he said, "I think greed is healthy. You can be greedy and still feel good about yourself." He reportedly was the kind of wasteful asshole that would go to nice, fancy restaurants and order everything on the menu and then just nibble on parts of it. He was a complete turkey who lost his soul in the pursuit of making money, and he knew he was cooked. In an interview in 1985, before he was busted for insider trading, he said, "I can't predict my demise, but I suspect it will occur abruptly." Abruptly. Another fucking weird word. And anyway, within a year, he was arrested. And once again, having money means nothing about a person's character or true worth or decency. As the witty as hell writer Dorothy Parker once said, "If you want to know what God thinks of money, just look at the people he gave it to." And one of my favorites, Jennifer Jason Leigh, played Dorothy Parker in the 1994 movie Mrs. Parker and the Vicious Circle, directed by the arty Alan Rudolph. Dorothy Parker was sharp as shit, but also a troubled woman, somewhat tormented. The Vicious Circle was like a group of New York City writers, critics, and actors who met for lunch regularly at the Algonquin Hotel in New York. Algonquin. Jesus, what are these words? The Algonquin Hotel is still there, and the Round Table is now a tourist attraction. Okay, just a great and again under-the-radar movie. God, I love that phrase, under-the-radar. I say that all the time, along with one of my perennial favorites, Par for the Course. I think I say Par for the Course on a daily basis. Something like, "How you doing? Well, I'm drunk and have no girlfriend. Par for the course, but let's move on." Okay, the movie is Steven Soderbergh's The Underneath from 1985, with just a knockout noir about a loser played by Peter Gallagher, who has the bushiest eyebrows ever, who comes back to town, gets hooked up with his ex-wife, who is now with the thug William Fichtner, the amazing William Fichtner. Peter Gallagher gets involved in an armored car heist. It's totally awesome. Got a couple of completely hot women in it. Elizabeth Shue and Allison Elliott. God, Allison Elliott blew me away. And Elizabeth Shue actually came to the editing place I used to work at. She was married to the douche-ish Davis Guggenheim, who directed An Inconvenient Truth, a global warming movie, which we cut at my work. But anyway, The Underneath is a modern noir masterpiece, well shot, well acted, some serious femme fatale action. Shit, man, I love it. Last time I looked, it wasn't streaming. I had to buy the DVD, but try and track that one down. It's worth it. Okay, there's a limitless amount of noir and crime movies I could talk about, so let's start to wind this one down. I love Paul Newman. I recently watched Absence of Malice with him and Sally Field from 1981, directed by the god Sidney Pollack. It's good, not great, but The Verdict from 1982 is just a total classic, directed by Sidney Lumet with the screenplay by, yes, him again, David Mamet. Kind of a redemption story about a somewhat washed up and alcoholic lawyer played by Paul Newman who decides to do the right thing to fight for his client. It's just pro as hell, a goddamn adult, well-made movie. Probably not many people have the patience to watch it these days, but oh well, fuck them. But yeah, Paul Newman is in a great crime thriller noir called Twilight from 1998 with Newman as a retired private eye who uncovers a blackmail scheme. It's directed by the powerhouse Robert Benton with, get this, Susan Sarandon, Gene Hackman, Reese Witherspoon, Liev Schreiber, and fucking James Garner. Yes, you heard that right, James Garner. It's a classy, stylish movie. It's kind of tragic, a tale of corruption and cynicism. And it just reminds us that at the end of the day, you just got to try and do the right thing. I mean, life can be the shits, but you should try and live with some decorum, some decency. It's easy to do the wrong thing or to be a dick. It takes work and at least try to be a good guy, you know? Okay, a couple more movies and then time for the final credits. I admire David Lynch. I don't always love his movies, but good God, Blue Velvet from 1986 is so good. Kyle MacLachlan is a student who finds a severed ear in a field and he starts to investigate and just gets himself mixed up into an absolutely twisted, dangerous world with a lounge singer played by Isabella Rossellini, who is the daughter of the actress Ingrid Bergman and the director Robert Rossellini. And David Lynch and her were an item for a few years back then. But God, it's got one of the greatest psychopaths in film history with the character Frank Booth, played by Dennis Hopper. He's terrifying. It's a great movie. And it's kind of like David Lynch started getting so fucking weird with his movies that I lost him. But this one is a legit great film. And Dennis Hopper has some of the weirdest, most legendary quotes ever in this, including, "Fuck you, you fucking fuck." And also, "Heineken, fuck that shit. Pabst Blue Ribbon, that's what you'll drink tonight." Dennis Hopper used to live in a cool-ass compound in Venice, California, on Indiana Avenue, designed by the overhyped Frank Gehry. But yeah, Dennis Hopper was undeniably a truly classic Hollywood figure. Okay, let's end with a fantastic kind of noir tragic tale with Jack Nicholson and Jessica Lange. It's a remake of The Postman Always Rings Twice. The original, also great, is from 1946 with goddamn Lana Turner and the diminutive but powerful John Garfield, who died at the age of 39 from a heart attack. John Garfield was called to testify before the House Committee on Un-American Activities, and he denied any communist affiliation, and he refused to name any names. Unlike Alia Kazan, who informed on 8 former colleagues from a left-wing group. Rest in peace, John Garfield. And his refusal to name names effectively ended his film career, and possibly the stress from the trial caused his heart attack. So anyway, the dude had integrity. But the remake is from 1981, directed by just the awesome Bob Raffleson, starring Jack Nicholson and Jessica Lange, based on the book by James M. Cain. And the screenplay is by, yes, this motherfucker again, David Mamet. Man, it's fantastic. Just kind of a torrid, feverish romance between two lovers who plot a murder and it goes haywire. It's completely tragic, touching, and so up my alley. It's ridiculous. When I was a young idiot, I was always like, what's the big deal with Jack Nicholson? And then as I got older and smarter, or well, a little smarter at least, I was like, okay, wow, yeah, he's so goddamn good. Probably the best in the business, to be honest. Anyway, crime and criminals are just a part of life. We try and do the best we can, not fuck over other people, but sometimes the criminals win. As Woody Allen said, I think crime pays. The hours are good. You meet a lot of interesting people. You travel a lot. Another pretty great quote by the author K.J. Parker, which is actually a pseudonym for Tom Holt. How badass do you have to be to get a pseudonym, man? But anyway, the quote is, the crime contains its own punishment, which I think is true. Even if you get away with a crime, it slowly can wear you down and it eats at your soul. And if you think you're so smart and can outwit everyone, well, someday you may run into a modern day version of Agatha Christie's Hercule Poirot, who said in A Haunting in Venice, what is it that I do? When a crime has been committed, I can, by application of order and method, and the slow extinguishing of my own soul, find without fail or doubt who done it. How good is that? The slow extinguishing of my own soul. Ooh, fuck me, that's great. Okay, until next time, let's not break any laws, okay?